Hello. Welcome to the Saturn edition of your local talking newspaper, covering St Albans and the surrounding district. This edition is for the week ending January 16th, 2021. My name is Alex, I'm the editor of the programme. Due to the ongoing coronavirus situation, we are still unable to record in our studio, so this edition is being produced from home. I am joined remotely from their homes by Lisanne, Mayo, Liz and Alison, who'll be reading the news, and John, who'll be reading the radio listings. A massive thank you to them for helping out. The music this week is called Chelsea Buns and is by Goffby. As usual, the whole piece will be played at the end of the recording. All the news items in this recording have been taken from the Hearts Advertiser, and we will finish with a summary of the radio programmes we think you might enjoy over the next week. Here is Lisanne with the first news item.
Hello, my name is Lisanne Elvers, and my article is entitled "We are determined to get on top of this, and we will." Inside St Albans's COVID Vaccination Centre. Have you been lucky enough to head to St Albans's very own dedicated COVID vaccination clinic up at Batchwood Hall? The Hearts ad spoke with members of the team behind the district's rollout for an insight into what happens behind the scenes. It's a great thing to be part of. I can't begin to tell you of the real positive can-do spirit in the vaccine centres themselves from all the staff and volunteers, Dr. Sarah Dowling, who is a partner at the Lodge Health Partnership, said. The clinic is a joint effort of 8 GP practices across St Albans, which has been running at Batchwood Hall since December. A vaccination centre which went from being just a concept to a fully operating service in under just a month. The initiative has already seen almost half of St Albans's over 80s vaccinated, as well as all staff and residents of older people's care homes. The team will have contacted the rest of the over 80s population by next week for their vaccination appointment. District nurse Charlotte Sharman, who is part of the vaccination programme, said, "It's amazing how people have been cooperating and encouraging each other. People have really stepped up and taken on new roles, and for some people that might have been difficult, but they've really put themselves out there to learn new skills and getting familiar with new computer systems that they've never used before. It's really been very rewarding and good to see." And the camaraderie doesn't stop there. Liz Richards, whose job as practice manager across the Lodge Health Partnership has also included calling up patients for their appointments, noted that the programme has brought nurses from other surgeries together. "It's been really lovely for them to meet a bigger peer group and to network. That's been a positive spin-off from the whole programme." And with a high percentage of the nursing staff at Batchwood also receiving their life-saving vaccines, Liz added that the rollout is more robust now their staff are protected. "Everybody needs to play their small part by having the vaccine when it's their opportunity to have it," she said. Nurse Charlotte is reassuring those who have any amount of fear surrounding their vaccination to not be afraid to attend. "I just want to encourage people that if you're offered a slot to take it up, you'll be looked after well and you'll be treated as an individual. Although we are trying to get hundreds of the vaccines done, people are still respected and given time and assistance if they need it. There still isn't solid evidence that COVID vaccines prevent transmission, but Dr. Dowling confirms that it's highly likely to stop the fire progressing. Every person who has this is very likely to be stopping the virus going further," she added, explaining that it's not just about protecting your nearest and dearest. Charlotte interjected, "Even if you feel you're not somebody that's at risk, it's still worth having your vaccine. By protecting yourself, by having the vaccine, you're less likely to spread the infection to someone vulnerable." And with vaccination centres up and down the country hitting the headlines for outside queuing, our St Albans vaccination team have some advice for those lucky enough to have an appointment who may find themselves braving the elements. Sarah said, "We would advise you to stay in your car until it's time for your appointment. Come on time, wrap up warm, but in layers so we can get to your arm easily. And with the Pfizer vaccine, be prepared to wait for 15 minutes afterwards. We have an area with heaters where you can sit and wait. But what does it feel like to be such a vital part of a nationwide and also global effort? Sharla answered first, in a heartbeat. I feel really privileged to be part of this campaign. I feel every time I do a clinic that I'm gaining in confidence, and I feel the whole service is getting smoother and adapting to any problems that there have been. I think it's a great thing to be a part of and feeling like you really are making a difference. Dr. Sarah added, I feel very privileged to be part of this campaign. We are determined to get on top of this, and we will. This is a real collaborative effort on behalf of all the practices in St. Albans. We're all really pulling together.
This article is called Pubs Call for Change of Government Restrictions. After months of disruption caused by lockdowns and government restrictions, the district's pubs have now been prevented from offering takeaway sales to their customers. Not only has this policy had a detrimental impact on our pubs' finances, but it also encourages more people to visit supermarkets, which are one of the high-risk locations for COVID infection. Residents now find it easier to stop by their local supermarket to stock up on alcohol rather than order delivery from a pub. And Sainsbury's on Hollywell Hill has even loaded the adjacent Early Learning Centre with supplies of booze. When the Hearts ad contacted Sainsbury's press office for a comment on this new development, all media relations manager Sophie Stronel would say was, the Early Learning Centre space at our Hollywell Hill store is being temporarily used for storage. Now, the Save St Albans Pubs initiative has joined forces with Camera to campaign against the government policy. SSP founder Sean Hughes, owner of Dillon's and landlord of The Boot, said, when our heritage pubs operated as off-licences during the first two lockdowns, this took the pressure off supermarket footfall. They were also able to fulfil their role as essential community hubs and keep an eye on the well-being of regulars. Now the government policy is forcing our community pubs out of business, encouraging irresponsible drinking. Christo Tafali, owner of Ye Old Fighting Cock, said, the damage supermarkets are causing by selling booze irresponsibly is massive. Ross Kinrew, owner of the Farmer's Boy on London Road, said, it's part of British heritage to have a pub, and the government's policy is no longer just chipping away at our heritage. It's destroying pubs. Mark Powell, co-owner of The Mermaid, added, what's safer, a packed supermarket or an outdoor off-licence service hatch at your local pub serving sealed bottles only? Utter madness. Save St Albans Pubs is now calling on central government to take a common sense approach, take the pressure off supermarkets and let pubs sell takeaway alcohol responsibly. This will help residents keep their travel within neighbourhoods rather than encourage the massive crowds at supermarkets. And it will help save our pubs as well as lives. They're also asking residents to keep supporting pubs by phoning them directly to order delivery and to drink responsibly. Sign Camera's petition at https://camera.e-activist.com/page/73809/action/1. Meanwhile, Save St Albans Pubs has been working with councillors Danny Clare and Mandy McNeil on a solution to having to pour thousands of pounds of draft beer down the drain. from Thursdays to Saturdays, they will be running a stall at Cellar Door Wines on the Verulam Industrial Estate between 2 to 6pm, enabling many of our local pubs to be able to sell click and collect draft beer, ciders and ales in sealed containers. Sean Hughes explained, following the ludicrous decision to stop pubs from selling their beers, except for expensive delivery, Danny and Mandy were able to discuss the mechanics with St Albans District Council licensing officers to come up with a couple of options for us. This is a win-win option of working with the incredible people at Cellar Door Wines, who have allowed us to have a communal stall outside their shop, so that pubs can sell their beer on the stall for click and collect. There's plenty of room for social distancing and for the logics around a COVID-secure click-and-collect system. Customers must wear a mask at all times. The stall will be manned at times by various of your favourite landlords, including the Lower Red Lion, the Mermaid and the Jolly Sailor, and wine will also be on sale from Cellar Door. Pre-packaged draft beer donated by Far Brew and the Goat will also be sold to help raise funds to support pubs on the brink, and Stick One In vouchers will be available to order by QR scan.
Hi, this is Liz. My first article today is on pubs in lockdown. In spite of being lobbied by MPs and thousands signing a camera petition, on January the 8th, the government said it would not change the rules affecting pubs while supermarkets would remain free to sell alcohol. A further nail has been hammered into the coffin of the battered pub by the government's decision to ban take-home services during the third lockdown. Last year, many pubs and small breweries were kept afloat by their ability to offer fresh draft beer to drinkers, but that window of opportunity has now been slammed shut. But the new rules don't stop supermarkets and other retail outlets from selling alcohol by the slab. The tortured thinking behind this curious ruling is highlighted in St Albans by the King William IV pub that stands at the Sandridge Road Beach Road junction. It's now dark, shuttered and beyond the pale. Over the road, a Shell petrol station includes a Londis convenience store. I can go to the shop without buying petrol and can pick up beer and wine for takeaway with opening hours that go beyond the permitted hours for a pub. Across the road is a majestic wine warehouse, which at the moment has a 50% sale. A few yards away, a Tesco Metro has several aisles offering beer, wine and spirits. It opens from 6am until 11pm, hours that put the average Wetherspoons in the shade. Cheek by jowl, three stores serve unlimited amounts of alcohol from dawn until dusk. None offers the creature comforts of the King Will or any other pub. A warm welcome, hot food, as well as drink, and the chance to unwind, read a book, a newspaper, or watch TV. At present, it can't even allow customers the opportunity to buy take-home draft beer. I have seen photos where some pubs sold alcohol in open containers, leading to an abuse of the rules, with drinkers congregating outside. This, by common consent, only involved a small minority. When I bought take-home beer from local pubs, I had to stand in orderly queues, keeping well apart from one another. Abuses could and should have been dealt with against individual establishments, as in all other walks of life, rather than risking the livelihoods of the fully compliant majority. Kate Nichols, Chief Executive of UK Hospitality, says, "Take-home sales were a valuable lifeline for some venues. That lifeline is now being strangled, making survival seem even harder for lots of businesses. If the government's intention is to discourage people congregating outdoors, there doesn't seem much logic to it. People will go to supermarkets and off licences and buy cans and bottles, while stock in closed pubs goes to waste and compounds pub losses. It's another example of hospitality being scapegoated yet again." The reopening of schools and universities led to a resurgence of the virus, not the reopening of pubs. Even with the eat out to help out boosting of customer numbers in August. The new restrictions will mean that many pubs will close not just for lockdown, but for good. Figures compiled by the British Beer and Pub Association show that in 2020, 2,500 pubs closed, twice as many as in 2019. There's been a decrease in the total number of pubs of 7,600 in the past 10 years. Since 2000, 13,600 pubs have closed. Pubs have suffered as a result of growing competition from fast food outlets and coffee bars, but one of the major causes of the decline is the price of beer. Supermarkets and other retailers can buy beer at deep discounts from big global brewers, while publicans have to pay top prices for their beer. It's not surprising that many people, especially those on lower incomes, prefer to buy cheap beer from supermarkets. Publicans have both hands tied behind their back. Even prior to COVID, the beer they buy is expensive and they are saddled with high rents and crippling levels of business rates. Many have called it today and more will follow. At the very least, the government should, as a matter of urgency, lift the ban on take-home beer and throw the pub a lifeline.
Hello, this is Alison. My first story has the headline, Educational Excellence, Praise for Our Staff During Third Lockdown. Okay, parents, you've had a week's practice now. Are you ready for another 28 kids and Ofsted yet? The challenges of lockdown have made mums and dads even more appreciative of the education system as they strive to juggle between homeschooling, work and domestic chores. But spare a thought for those teachers trying to arrange lesson plans and maintain morale for pupils remotely, office staff trying to coordinate teaching for key workers' children, and head teachers facing up to the prospect of running exams under very different conditions this year. We wanted to recognise the amazing teams working in schools across the district during this time and ask readers to send us their tributes to teachers and support staff. Elizabeth Hunt praised the team at St Peter's School in St Albans. She said, all the teachers, TAs, office staff and definitely Robin the caretaker, keeping their pupils and families going through thick and thin, brilliant, encouraging teaching and support. Jane Salisbury wanted to acknowledge all the staff at Skyswood for getting their online learning up and running straight away and for the work they are trying to do for the key worker children. Gretel Gould sent words of encouragement to all the staff at Wheatfields Infant and Junior School in St Albans, saying, especially Mrs Pratt from Chestnut Class, such amazing care and support throughout the entirety of this pandemic, always making time to talk things through and ensure both parents and pupils have all the support they need. Claire Pass enthused, Samuel Ryder Academy teaching staff are outstanding. Mr. Tester is always going above and beyond. Mr. Hock is an all-round great teacher. The list is endless at this school. I cannot thank them enough for their commitment and dedication. It's amazed me. Jenny Murray agreed. There are so many at Samuel Ryder Academy. Miss Reed, Miss Leet, Mr. Crockford, Mr. Gautier, Mr. King, Mr. Fothergill, Mr. Chatterley, Mrs. Glacier, to name but a few, and in no particular order. Lisa Halu wanted to recognise staff at Beaumont School for working during their personal holiday time to get ready for online learning. They are constantly adapting to new rules and guidelines. A massive shout out, please. Justina Stewart praised Mrs. Rowe and all teachers and staff members at Howwood Primary School and Nursery. She said they are doing an amazing job. Gemma Hanley knew who she wanted to recognise for a shout out. How about to all those nursery staff at Busy Bees Glenalmond in King Harry Lane, who are still all continuing to work through the pandemic? Keep up the good work, ladies. Tatiana Williams praised everyone at Muriel Green Nursery and Sammy Ackroyd sent a cheer to all the teachers at the Abbey School. They are just a little bit amazing, she said.
Lucy Morrison highlighted all staff at Loreto College St Albans, especially Miss Ross, head of sixth form. They all care so much for the girls. Thank you. Linda Ritchie said she wanted to recognise all the staff at Verulam School. They have worked tirelessly and are doing an amazing job in such difficult circumstances. I've never been prouder of our school. Chris Neville gave a shout out to all the teachers and teaching assistants at Bowman's Green, including her mum, Mrs. Neville, while Eileen Morrison wanted to recognise Mrs. Welton in reception at Garden Field School. She is a true legend, she said. Send her love from her snowdrops. Emma Payne wasn't going to miss the opportunity to recognise the work and her colleagues at Busy Bees Rothamsted Lodge. We are the only nursery in Harpenden to stay open during the first lockdown and throughout everything. All the girls are still working very hard, despite finding it a little bit hard at times. Well done to everyone. More comments in next week's Heart Advertiser. If you want to pay tribute to your children's school staff, please add them to the pinned Facebook post on the Heart's Ad page.
This article is entitled Granny Launches Petition for Priority COVID Jabs. A petition to prioritise grandparents who provide childcare for COVID vaccinations has been launched by a St Albans churchgoer. Phyllis Lane, a former pastor at St Albans Vineyard Church, plays a key role in enabling her daughter to work as a teacher by looking after her grandchild, but isn't likely to receive her vaccination until later on in the year. She has now launched a campaign calling on the government to recognise the crucial role played by grandparents in allowing key workers to continue in their critical roles. She said, "As grandparents in our 60s, we look after our granddaughter in a childcare bubble. Our daughter is a teacher in a London college and her students are classed as vulnerable. She cannot work from home and she also needs to take public transport. Her partner is also a key worker. The COVID infection rate is rising rapidly with this new variant and the risk of getting ill and passing it on is particularly high. The current prioritised order to receive vaccinations seems good, but grandparents in this situation will not be due their vaccines for many months. Grandparents providing childcare for teachers, NHS and key workers on the front line should have priority to receive the vaccine." Fliss added, "It's very important because they are not only enabling teachers and key workers to work and keep everything running, but they are in a higher risk age group. Government and society is dependent on NHS workers, teachers and all other key workers carrying on working, and if they have children, they need to be looked after. Nurseries are still open, but most key workers can't afford to pay. They rely on the grandparents. They don't want to put their parents at risk, but have no choice if they are to feed their families and keep their jobs." Comments from those who have already signed the letter include, "I look after my grandson while my daughter-in-law is a carer for the elderly. And I'm a key worker, but my mum is at risk for providing me with childcare." To sign the petition, go to https://bit.ly/2/C/IVC.
Young duo take on Attenborough-inspired sporting spectacular. A St Albans duo have taken on a mammoth charity challenge inspired by Sir David Attenborough's documentaries. Sam, aged 8, and Seb, aged 7, have embarked on a 30-day running challenge to raise funds and awareness for the World Land Trust after watching many of Attenborough's documentaries, including A Life on Our Planet. Sam and Seb, who are both in Year 3 at a St Albans primary school, plan to run 202.1 kilometres between them from January the 9th to February the 7th to kick-start the new year. Both keen footballers and cricketers, Sam and Seb find a love of running over lockdown periods when they couldn't train or play matches with their local clubs. Starting twice a week during the first lockdown, they eventually built up to running the summer solstice 10 kilometres. Sam said, "I watched a charity ad on TV over Christmas. My mum explained why and how people raise money for charities and the difference it can make. I wanted to do the same, and that's where it started." The boys got together over Zoom to brainstorm fundraising ideas and to decide what charity meant the most to them. Seb added, "Over Christmas, I watched David Attenborough's A Life on Our Planet. I felt very sad and wanted to find a way to help our planet." Before even taking a step for the challenge, Sam and Seb managed to smash their £2,021 target. Their current total stands at £3,271, which is enough to protect more than 30 acres of land. The boys got in contact with Sir David to let him know of their efforts and have also received a retweet from the World Land Trust, of which Sir David is a patron. The tweet said, "Incredible. So proud of Sam and Seb, the intrepid runners for nature who have given us a conservation optimism boost to get 2021 going. From World Life Land Trust and our partners, thank you." Sam's mum, Rebecca Johnson, told the Hearts ad, "The boys started running through the first lockdown and thought to stay positive and make the most of January, they would put their good energy to use. For updates on Sam and Seb's progress and to donate to their fundraiser, visit justgiving.com/fundraising/Rebecca-Andrew-Johnson.
"Positives of crafting keeps me going," says St Albans resident. A St Albans creative has used her time in self-isolation proactively by crafting every day. Alison Billington, who lives in Cottonmill, told the Hearts ad about her crafting over lockdown, which has involved painting, crochet, and, most impressive of all, creating intricate miniature depictions of real-life objects. Ali takes her inspiration from the world around her, including a vado, which is a traditional, usually bright-coloured horse-drawn wagon, from her 2018 trip to Ireland to visit her sister Fiona, a canal boat and a chateau, inspired by the Channel 4 programme Escape to the Chateau. "I went over to Ireland with my husband Andy to see Fiona in 2018, and that's where I got my idea for the vado, which is a little gypsy caravan. I actually saw a traditional one, amazing thing it is. I've also got a Georgian house, which I made in 2017, and that was my pride and joy until I made my chateau." Ali, who has been self-isolating throughout the coronavirus pandemic, spent over 6 months perfecting her chateau, starting in January of last year and completing it in July. Ali has spent the last 4 years overcoming stage 4 lung cancer, which has meant that under the current COVID-19 restrictions, she has had to keep herself at home. "My chateau has kept me sane the whole of this year. No matter how good or bad days I have, every day for 6 months, I would find something I could concentrate on and take my mind off this awful year. As long as I stay positive, that's what keeps me going." Ali also spent her time making crochet blankets for animal rescue charities, as well as for friends and family, including a floral picnic blanket for brighter days ahead. Speaking fondly of her La Maison des Souris, or House of Mice, to you and me, on New Year's Eve, Ali said, "A lot of my friends haven't been able to come to the house to even look at it, and hopefully next year they might be able to. I open it up and put all the lights on, and it's so pretty, especially all the Christmas lights up the staircase. It's lovely. It lifts your spirits completely."
The next story has the headline, "St Albans firms urged to enforce COVID rules after reported breaches." Essential businesses are being urged to enforce government restrictions and help stop the spread of coronavirus in the district. St Albans BID, Business Improvement District, and the District Council have reacted to concerns about people not wearing masks in shops and the lack of enforcement of COVID guidelines. Council leader, Councillor Chris White, said he has lost patience with the situation. He said, "Shopping is one of the biggest sources of COVID, and councillors have told me they are concerned about the attitude of supermarkets towards government restrictions. So far, I have had criticisms of Morrison's for no visible one-way system, the Co-op on London Road for the manager not wearing a mask, and Tesco on St Peter Street, where staff were not seen wearing masks when stacking shelves, although this has improved on subsequent visits. I intend to call out offenders on Twitter, as well as consult with the District Council officers as to the next steps in getting people to understand that this is serious." The County Council is also targeting supermarkets and has said it is prepared to name and shame. BID Vice Chair Mandy McNeil said, "We understand how tough a lockdown is for many, but we are all in this together, and by working together as a community, we can save lives. We all want to support our local businesses, and in many cases, this can be done online and delivery or click and collect. So please use these services if you are able to. If you are out shopping for essential items, please remember to wash hands, wear a mask at all times in shops and outside unless you have an exemption, maintain social distancing, and help to save lives. We urge people who are out for exercise or essential shopping and see any social distancing or non-compliance issues, please dial 101 and report it to our police, who are responsible for enforcing. We also encourage businesses to do the same. If there are any shoppers who are blatantly ignoring rules by not wearing masks and do not have an exemption, this should result in immediate action. Residents can also email the District Council's Environmental Health Team to report COVID breaches at environmental@stalbans.gov.uk.
This article is entitled "Conjuring Under COVID with Sonic." How do you perform magic during lockdown? That was the challenge faced by St Albans entertainer Tony Middleton, known professionally as Sonic, after his career ground to a halt in the wake of the pandemic. Tony makes his living performing magic shows for the public. In the last 10 years, he has been featured on the hit TV series Penn and Teller, Fool Us, and now produces several of the most successful parlour magic shows in London. These are a mix of stage and close-up magic, taking place in an intimate setting with an audience of around 50 people, with Tony dressed in classic white tie and tails. His biggest success, The Magic Hour, has been running for over 7 years to 5-star reviews and complete sellouts, first at St Pancras Renaissance Hotel and then the Sheraton Grand London Park Lane in Mayfair. But like so many in the theatre and hospitality industries, COVID had a massive impact on his work. "I feel so much for all artists, musicians and performers. Before March last year, I was incredibly busy performing almost every night of the week, either in my own shows or private events. I reached a point where I would turn away work to make sure I had family time. Then, overnight with the pandemic, everything changed." So how does a magician conjure his way out of the COVID disaster when there are no theatres, hotels or events to perform at? Like many people, I had to look at the possibilities of online. For years I wanted to make an online magic show, but I didn't have the time or enough of a reason to do it. So I gradually started to put my attention to all the years of performance experience I have and built a school that can help anyone to learn to be a magician from the ground up. It's been a really interesting thing to do, and now I have students from all over the world who I wouldn't have reached before. I can engage with each of them personally through one-to-one lessons and Zoom classes. Right now, there's over 100 training videos on the website and over 16 hours worth of Zoom class footage that students can watch on demand. So it doesn't matter whether you live in St. Albans or South America, you can tune in and watch whenever you like. I can help individuals in the same way as if you went to your music teacher for a lesson. That's really the best way to learn magic, from someone who's been there and done it, because it can save you so much time and frustration. But don't worry, Tony isn't breaking the code of the magic circle by revealing his secrets. When you pass your entrance exam for the magic circle, you sign up to their code of conduct, which is not to give secrets away. However, there are certain exemptions, one of which is a pupil under magical instruction. Of course, I don't give everything away immediately. You have to earn your way to the bigger secrets. There are certain tricks that we professionals keep very close to our chest. Why not do something different and learn a new skill during the new lockdown? Tony has also created immersive online magic show, Virtually Impossible, streamed live from the Oak Room at the Sheraton Grand London Park Lane. I wanted to create a good online magic show and evoke the darker world of magic full of secrets. It has just the right feel for that and really helps the audience to journey into the world of the Victorian masters of deception. I also wanted to make it mobile, where the camera follows me, and bring magic as close as possible to the audience at home. There are no camera cutaways to avoid trickery, and with only Tony performing, there are no stooges either. You might not think it's possible to do magic over the internet, but certain tricks are done in your own hands, and that makes it really exciting. In fact, there are some small tricks that you can't really do anywhere other than in a television or live stream format, so it actually opens up options considerably for what I can share with people. What connects with an audience at home isn't just the flashy stuff. Feedback has been great, and we've had companies like Facebook and YouTube book us to give online private shows as well. You can find out more about Tony's lockdown activities at www.magichourshow.com.
There is a picture of St. Albans resident Martin Brown, and he is looking as if he's on a very nice summer place for a holiday, with this blue sky behind him. But the title of this is in relation to charity, and he is a trainee London tour guide who is raising funds for the St. Albans and Heartsmere Women's Refuge, in brackets SAHWR, which provides specialist domestic abuse services. The free event, Six in the City of St. Albans, will tell the history of St. Albans through the stories of six powerful women over time, in exchange for a donation to the charity. St. Albans resident Martin Brown wanted to do something to help his local community while studying for his London Blue Badge tour guide qualification. The retired head teacher said, "St. Albans has a great story to tell from the Romans to today, and there are some truly inspiring women connected to our great city." SAHWR has been supporting victims of domestic violence and abuse for 38 years, always evolving to meet their changing needs. Their original refuge, which opened in St. Albans in 1982, remains the hub of services across Southwest Hearts. The virtual tour will take place via Zoom at 6 p.m. on Sunday, January the 17th.
A museum is looking to track down students and teachers from a former art school. St Albans Museums and UH Arts, the University of Hertfordshire's Arts and Cultural Programme, are collecting memories of the St Albans School of Arts, which was based in the Cathedral City for over a century. Last year, St Albans Museums acquired a painting by Maurice Field entitled Students at St Albans School of Art, 1957. Inspired by the acquisition, the museum service is working with UH Arts to research the art school and is looking to add associated memories and objects to its collection. The St Albans School of Art first opened on Victoria Street in 1890 in a building that is now part of the Maltings development. In 1973, it moved to a new building in Hatfield Road before merging with Hatfield Polytechnic and becoming the University of Hertfordshire's School of Creative Arts. During its time in St Albans, tutors at the school included sculptor John Mills, painters Arnold van Praag and Roger Lieberthy, printmaker John Brunsden, Bill Pletz in graphic design, and textile designer Angela Dean. Curators at St Albans Museums are now asking anyone who has a memory, photograph or object associated with the school to share this with the museum. These memories will provide the starting point for further research, oral history recordings, and potential additions to the museum collections. Councillor Anthony Rowlands, St Albans District Council's portfolio holder for community, leisure and sport, said, "The St Albans School of Art played a huge role in the life of St Albans for over 100 years, and still does through shared exhibitions with UH Arts. This is a chance for St Albans museums to record memories and stories before they are lost." Email museum@stalbans.org.uk to share your story in 400 words. St Albans Museum Service runs the city's portfolio of museums and heritage sites, including Verulamium Museum, the Hypocaust, the Clock Tower, Sopwell Ruins, and the St Albans Museum and Gallery.
A blocked drain which overflows whenever it rains is unlikely to be repaired anytime soon. The blockage at the junction of Victoria Road and Alma Road, St Albans, causes rainwater to create a massive puddle which risks splashing people waiting at the crossing. A spokesperson for Herts County Council, which is responsible for the drain, said, "Surface water drainage systems are maintained through a cyclical gully cleaning programme and ad hoc maintenance. Occasionally, drains may become heavily silted up and are unable to be cleaned as part of the cyclical programme. When this happens, a follow-up visit is often required to manually dig the gully out." Alma Road, where the flooding issue was reported, is on an 18-month cleansing schedule. The gully at this location was last attended on August the 18th and identified as being blocked and requiring a manual dig out. This work was added to our rolling programme of manual dig outs and will be completed when our schedule allows.
Here are the names of people who have recently died, as announced in this week's Hearts Advertiser. Shirley Liddington, aged 88. Margaret Audrey Parker, aged 89. Roy Bowerman, aged 76. Janet Mary Godman, née Newell, aged 67. Samuel Thurendran Nalia, no age given. Issa Ayub, aged 85. Robin Christopher Lee, aged 78. And Joy Minnie Wynne, no age given. May they rest in peace. And now for a piece from the Talking News Federation about Burns Night.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Burns Night. Hello, this is Mary Buckley with an article on Burns Night written by Jane Holmes. The annual celebration of Burns Night, in memory of the Scottish poet Robert Burns, occurs on his birthday, the 25th of January. It's a way of showing how much people still admire him and his works. Celebrations take place worldwide, but they're especially a big deal in Scotland. The very first Burns Night was held in the year 1802, when a group of Burns friends came together to commemorate his death 5 years previously, on the 21st of July, 1796. Burns was born to parents who were from a farming community, and so his work is mainly about religion, nature, and life on the farm where he grew up. These celebrations are called Burns Suppers, and they can be formal or informal affairs. Formal suppers have a definite pattern to them, and everyone attends in formal dress, men in their kilts and women in evening dresses, and everyone enjoys getting dressed up for this occasion. The top table consists of the host and special guests and entertainers. Others who attend are seated on tables arranged around the room, and the host welcomes everyone and introduces entertainers and guests. Before the meal comes the prayer, the Selkirk Grace, to thank God for the meal that they're about to eat. Some hae meat, but can he eat, and some hae nane, but want it. But we hae meat, and we can eat, so let the Lord be thankit. After that comes the parade of the haggis, when the piper pipes in the haggis, which is paraded round the room on a silver platter by the head chef to great ceremony. I'll stand and toast the haggis with whisky. A typical Burns supper menu might consist of a starter of cockaleeky soup, which is chicken and leek soup, the main course of haggis, neeps and tatties, and that's mashed turnip and mashed potato, and a dessert of raspberry trifle, which could be crannachan, which is cream, oatmeal, whisky and raspberries. After dinner, one of the guests proposes the immortal memory. This consists of a humorous speech with many quotations from some of Burns' poems to commemorate him. And again, Burns is toasted and all drink whisky. Men stand and toast the lassies by enjoying another drink. A woman replies with another speech, usually at the expense of the men, and everyone has another whisky to toast Robert Burns. The evening ends with some of Burns' poetry and songs being read or sung, and everyone stands up, joins hands and sings Auld Lang Syne.
TNF Soundings.
This article is entitled Judicial Review Claim on Hospital Redevelopment Dismissed Despite Campaign Group Opposition. A High Court judge has dismissed claims that Hearts Valley's CCG was unlawful in its decision-making process around the redevelopment of hospital buildings in West Hearts. In 2019, a judicial review claim was submitted on behalf of a group of campaigners alleging that decisions the CCG made in that year to agree a short list of sites, and then the preferred option, for the redevelopment of hospital buildings in West Hearts were unlawful on the basis of lack of formal public consultation. The conclusion reached by the judge found that both the CCG's decisions were lawful, and the judge has dismissed the claim. The New Hospital Campaign, NHC, has stated that they will continue the battle to secure a new A&D hospital in West Hertfordshire, despite the ruling. The NHC explained that the High Court did acknowledge that the campaign group was not given access to the full calculations and projections used to estimate the cost of the new build options, and recognised that NHC's contribution to the debate about the rejection of those options could have been more fully informed than it was. A NHC spokesperson said, "Of course, we are surprised and disappointed by the judge's decision, but it's vital to understand this was not about whether it is better to keep patching up the current Vicarage Road site in Watford or to go for a central, clear site for a new hospital fit for the coming decades. It was purely about the process used to reach two decisions that were made a year and a half ago." The NHC recently commissioned an independent report from a construction specialist, which shows that building on a central site would be more time efficient than making the improvements put forward by the West Harts Hospital Trust, WHHT. WHHT said, colleagues at West Hertfordshire NHS Hospitals Trust will press on with the work they have been doing with full support from the CCG to develop proposals as outlined to our boards in October and discussed with local people throughout this period. We will be doing more in the coming months, building on the extensive engagement already undertaken to involve local residents in working up the detail for our next submission to regulators and government.
There is a picture of a person called Michelle Cave, who was sentenced to 20 months on December the 23rd after having been caught on film abusing a 15-year-old girl in her care. The mother of this girl has spoken out after her daughter's carer was jailed for treating her like a rag doll. The victim, who is a tetraplegic and needs 24-hour care, was treated by Cave, her carer of 10 years, as a rag doll. The victim's mother told the Harts Ad, "Nothing will take away what she has done to our daughter. She's still going through therapy to get through it because she has regular nightmares still. It's far from over for us. We're just on the track of getting our daughter back to how she was before the event happened. Nothing makes up for what happened, and we're still dealing with the effects of the assault." Cave, aged 48, was caught when the victim's mother woke and saw on a monitor her swearing and manhandling her daughter. In a victim's statement read to the court, the mother said, "To have an employee I trusted to abuse my daughter to the highest degree is disgraceful. The abuse left the victim confused and scared. I cannot rid myself of the image of Michelle pulling her hair. She pulled and pushed her like a rag doll. I totally trusted Michelle. She worked for me for 10 years. My daughter could not tell me she was being abused." Cave appeared for sentencing, having pleaded guilty to the ill treatment and willful neglect between November the 25th and 27th last year. Defending Cave, Christopher Harding said, "I am making a full and unreserved apology on her behalf for her behaviour on that evening. She is deeply sorry. In doing what she did, she destroyed the trust and relationship." He said she had no previous convictions or cautions, but by having two jobs, had allowed the situation to arrive where she was not fit to work that night. Jailing her, Judge Caroline Wiggins said, "At the time you were working the night shift, and unbeknown to her mother, you were working day shifts as a carer. I have no doubt she, the victim, despite her difficulties in communicating, experiences pain, anxiety, and stress. What you did on that night may well affect her for the rest of her life." The judge also banned Cave from ever working as a carer.
Whipsnade Zoo carries out annual animal tally under third lockdown. Thousands of animals have stood up to be counted at ZSL Whipsnade Zoo as zookeepers kicked off the first annual stocktake under lockdown conditions. Despite being closed for a total of 18 weeks in 2020, the zoo's vital conservation work continues behind closed doors. Whipsnade's dedicated keepers this week began to take stock of almost 4,000 animals and 280 species, a compulsory task required as part of the zoo's licence. Whipsnade saw many new arrivals in 2020, boosting the number of threatened species, including some extinct in the wild, such as Nilo, an endangered red panda cub, 7 Chinese water deer, and 14 Peer David deer. Chief Operating Officer Owen Craft said, "Despite everything 2020 threw at us and the huge challenges we continue to face, it's so encouraging to take stock and highlight the positives in the last year. Our dedicated animal carers ensured our vital conservation work continued despite repeated closures and the financial pressures that created. As we now face another prolonged period of closure, we're asking for support once again. Any donation makes a huge difference. As part of the International Conservation Breeding Programme, two new female southern white rhinos were moved to the zoo in the autumn, and it's hoped that their introduction to Whipsnade's male Sizzle will encourage a further increase in the population's numbers. ZSL Animal Manager Matthew Webb said, "The stocktake gives us a chance to look back on the remarkable results of the past year. We're so proud to have played a part in many conservation breeding programs and to have helped increase numbers of threatened species, and we've been able to add some wonderful animals to the tally. The last year presented us all with so many challenges. Here at Whipsnade, we had to get used to new ways of working and saw some of our plans altered or paused. But we're looking forward and determined to make 2021 another success for conservation." The annual audit takes keepers almost a week to complete, and the information is shared with other zoos around the world to help manage worldwide conservation breeding programs for endangered species. Reliance on income from ticket sales to care for the animals and fund their global conservation efforts. Repeated enforced closures have put the charity zoo under huge financial pressure. You can help by donating what you can.
Cities Cinema awarded more than £120,000. While cinemas up and down the country remain temporarily closed, St Albans Art Deco Picture House has been awarded more than £120,000 from a special fund. The Odyssey has been granted cash from the government's coronavirus recovery pot. The cinema in London Road is currently closed due to the latest national lockdown. However, Odyssey is one of the beneficiaries from the government's £1.57 billion Culture Recovery Fund. Last month, more than 200 independent cinemas across England shared £16 million in grants from a £30 million fund allocated by the British Film Institute on behalf of the Department for Digital, Culture, Media and Sport as part of the biggest ever single investment in this country's cultural sectors. The Odyssey St Albans Limited share announced before Christmas was £120,377. That comprised of a business sustainability grant of £110,545 and nearly £10,000 in a health and safety award. Before the latest national lockdown was introduced, the restored cinema posted on its Instagram page, "We are really happy to announce that we have been awarded a grant from the DCMS Culture Recovery Fund. With this support, we will be in a better position to secure our future and continue our journey in 2021. Thank you to the British Film Institute for recognising our contribution to independent cinema. This will allow us to continue to serve the community by sharing the real cinematic experience we love so deeply. Hashtag here for culture." Although currently closed until further notice, the Odyssey intends to continue its varied programme of movies when restrictions are eased. Cinema manager Joe Littlejohn said, "With support and commitment of the Culture Recovery Fund, we can remain a beacon of hope for the community and local residents, somewhere they can get away and immerse themselves in a different world for just a couple of hours while feeling safe and welcome. Our exceptional team has worked hard, and even with the lack of new titles, our monthly programmes remain diverse and entertaining, showing films for all ages and tastes. With the collaborative effort and support of the BFI, Culture Recovery Fund, and our dedicated family of staff, we will not let the lights go out on our beautiful independent cinema." On announcing the grants last month, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Rishi Sunak, said, "As a Star Wars fan, I know there is no better place to experience great films than in your local cinema, and these grants will provide vital support for independent venues. Actor Michael Caine, who starred in Christopher Nolan's blockbuster Tenet, also welcomed the help for the industry and encouraged audience to support cinemas with safe visits when possible. So Michael Caine said, "The moving image has the power to change the way we think, the power to inspire, to delight, and to move. It happens to me all the time. Film is one of the most powerful and accessible art forms on earth. And for so many, a local cinema is a place we know, love, and have grown up with. A cinema is very often a vital part of any community, and we need to support them in order to keep the art of film and sense of community alive." The BFI worked closely with individual cinemas to provide detail and bespoke support throughout the application process. BFI Chief Executive Ben Roberts said, "Across the country, local independent cinemas are hubs and lifelines for communities and often the only form of culture and entertainment. From educational programs and workshops for young people to screenings for the elderly and audience with specialized needs, these cinemas play such an important role in people's lives. The Culture Recovery Fund will mean that many of these cinemas survive the current crisis and go on to play a vital role in the recovery of local economies and communities, bringing people together to offer joy, solace, and the magic of the big screen." More than $1 billion has now been allocated from the Culture Recovery Fund to support culture in all four nations during the COVID-19 pandemic. £14 million in further support will be made available to cinemas through the second round of funding allocated by the BFI earlier this year from the remainder of the Culture Recovery Fund.
Time for a look at some of this coming week's radio highlights, starting with Saturday, January 16th. You could begin your day by tuning to Radio 4 for a double bill. Saturday Live from 9 till 10.30, in which the Reverend Richard Coles and Nikki Benny are joined by, among others, Dame Joan Bakewell for a magazine programme which always has interesting items for discussion. Then go to The Kitchen Cabinet from 10.30am to 11am, in which Jay Rayner hosts the culinary panel show, answering questions sent in by listeners. You might prefer, of course, Radio 4 Extra at 10am till midday, which brings us Miriam Margolyes' Adventures in Radio. The actress looks back over her 50-year career on BBC Radio with a personal pick of favourite performances. And staying on Radio 4, at 3pm you will find the dramatisation of Joseph O'Connor's best-selling novel from 2004, Star of the Sea. An American journalist investigates the murder of a bankrupt landowner on a ship bound for New York, which is full of Irish refugees escaping from the Great Famine. Sunday, January 17th. First off, Sunday morning, Radio 3, 9 till midday, is the appropriately named programme that broadcasts attractive and uplifting music across a broad spectrum of taste. In this case, from Handel, Holst, through to jazz music from Jerry Mulligan and Keith Jarrett playing J.S. Bach. In the afternoon, Joseph Conrad's classic novel Heart of Darkness is dramatised on Radio 4 between 3 o'clock and 4 o'clock. The novel is, in fact, reimagined as a 21st century thriller in which a research team becomes lost in the heart of the Congo. But what was the nature of their research and what has become of their charismatic leader? An intriguing listen for a Sunday afternoon. After which you could find some solace in Sunday Night is Music Night, Radio 2, 7pm, tonight celebrating the lyricist Alan J. Lerner, who with Frederick Lowe gave us such glorious musical shows as Gigi, Camelot, Paint Your Wagon, and My Fair Lady. Now, you almost certainly have your regular programmes that you listen to during the week, but here are a few others that you may find of interest. So the following four programmes all run throughout the entire week, at the same time, on the same radio station, each day, Monday to Friday. So same time, same day, same radio station, Monday to Friday. starting off at 9:45 on Radio 4 and repeated at just after 12:30, English Pastoral and Inheritance by James Rebanks, read by Brian Dick. Now, Rebanks is a Lake District farmer whose previous book, A Shepherd's Life, became a bestseller. In this book, he writes of his determination to do right by his family, land, animals, and ecosystem. Also on Radio 4 at 10:45 and repeated each night at 7:45, Lamination by C.J. Sansom, adapted by Colin MacDonald. This dramatisation of one of Sansom's Shard Lake novels takes the hunchback lawyer on a full-on sensory immersion into Tudor England, in which the court of Henry VIII is a place where it's easy to lose one's head as one's heart. Over on Radio 3, at noon, each day brings us Composer of the Week, and it's Tchaikovsky. Donald MacLeod reflects on five aspects of the composer who put Russia on the international stage with his uniquely personal style. And on Classic FM, each evening, from 8 o'clock, John Suchet introduces the Classic FM concert. One that many will look forward to is broadcast on Wednesday of this week, when the featured composer is George Gershwin. On to the other programmes then that we'd like to draw your attention to for the rest of the week, starting on Monday, January 18th. Start the week with Andrew Marr on Radio 4 at 9 a.m. There's always something of interest in this magazine programme, and today's edition includes writer Russell T. Davis and composer Mark Anthony Turnage, which should guarantee conversation worth listening to. Alice Roberts begins her series of programmes, Bodies on the Human Anatomy, at 1:45, also on Radio 4. The series traces how human knowledge of anatomy has grown and changed. She begins by asking how people see their bodies and examines the idea of the soul. What is it and where is it? Over on Radio 4 Extra, the afternoon play at 3 o'clock begins a three-part dramatisation of John le Carrier's superb novel A Perfect Spy. A secret agent disappears after his father's death, prompting a manhunt to stop him defecting. Parts 2 and 3 follow on Tuesday and Wednesday. Le Carrier, who passed away recently, of course, wrote with elegant style and personal knowledge of the world of his espionage. In the opinion of many, this is one of his very best, and sensitively dramatised with an excellent cast as well. A Perfect Spy, Radio 4 Extra, 3 o'clock, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday this week. Staying with Tuesday, January 19th, as a true-life counterpart to Le Carrier, dramatisation on Monday, this afternoon's play on Radio 4 at 2:15 is called Breaking Blake and tells the story of the MI6 spy George Blake and his 1966 jailbreak from Wormwood Scrubs. Also on Radio 4 at 4:30, Great Lives examines the life and work of Delia Derbyshire, who pioneered electronic music, including the theme tune for Doctor Who. A fascinating glimpse into the work of a woman who had to fight against prejudice and opposition to realise her ambition. And a different kind of music awaits on Radio 2 at 9 p.m. as Jamie Cullum presents his hour-long jazz show. The show features classic recordings and special guest artists, maybe not to everyone's musical taste, but it does offer an alternative to the classic music programmes we've picked out for you. Wednesday, January 20th, at 9 a.m. on Radio 4, More or Less, a fascinating programme that examines the world of statistics. The use of stats is everywhere. Think about the use of them during the current COVID pandemic, and they need close examination for their truth or otherwise. Some would say that a certain USA president has made a skillful use, or abuse, of them during his term of office. This half-hour programme interrogates some of the stats in a very approachable way. Choral Evensong at 3:30 on Radio 3 comes from the Church of the London Oratory. The service includes music by Gabrielli, Palestrina and Gregorian chant, all of which should bring some moments of calm to help us cope, of course, during these troubled times. And long married couples often encounter troubled times, and how one pair have been turned into a very amusing comedy. Conversations from a Long Marriage is on Radio 4 at 6:30. It stars two of our finest comedy actors, Joanna Lumley and Roger Allam. Thursday, January 21st, and something a little more eclectic. Selected by the Radio Times as today's choice, it's Dub Revolution, the story of King Tubby, on Radio 4 at 11:30. Presenter Don Letts pays tribute to King Tubby, the producer whose sonic experiments in his tiny studio in Kingston, Jamaica, helped create the influential music genre dub. An open mind might be essential for this, but maybe worth giving it a try. Who knows what we might learn. On firmer ground, perhaps it's another Great Lives, this time on Radio 4 Extra at 6:30 p.m, when Matthew Paris assesses the legacy of Abraham Lincoln. And you could do worse than stay on Radio 4 Extra at 7 for a rerun of the classic comedy Round the Horn from 1965, here billed by the Radio Times as a camp comedy, at its best brilliant writing executed by a talented cast, of course. Enjoy that one. And if King Tubby was just a bit too much for you, you could choose the Classic FM concert at 8 p.m. or join Bob Harris for the Country Show on Radio 2 at 9. All, of course, according to your musical taste. And we round off this week's highlights on Friday, January 22nd, and cricket enthusiasts should take note of the fact that Radio 4 Longwave begins broadcasting day one of the first test between England and Sri Lanka at 5:30 in the morning and continues throughout the morning. So everything we mention on Radio 4 will be on FM or digital. Those of us of a certain age will remember the name of Ludwig Koch, the nature broadcaster, so we'll enjoy Ludwig Koch and the music of nature on Radio 4 Extra at 2:30. The poet, Sean Street, profiles the man who came to Britain to escape the Nazis and became the first to make recordings of birds, mammals and insects. Ludwig was once as popular as David Attenborough, becoming a household name after he joined the BBC in 1940. Radio 4 at 2:15 is an intriguing drama, Islander, which is a radio version of a cappella musical, which won the Best Musical Award at the 2019 Edinburgh Fringe. Two performers sing and play a host of characters and use their voices to create an expansive, ethereal soundscape for the ears and imagination. Does sound quite fascinating, probably well worth a listen. More conventional music at 7:30 p.m. on Radio 3 in concert. It's live from Manchester and features Stephen Hoff playing Beethoven's Piano Concerto No. 5, with symphonies also by Beethoven and Haydn, played by the BBC Philharmonic under conductor Mark Wigglesworth. As ever, we do hope you find something worth listening to from the selection above and continue to enjoy the many pleasures that radio brings to us all during these difficult times. As ever, enjoy and stay safe.
We have now come to the end of this recording, so from Lisanne, Mayo, Liz, Alison and John, and from me, Alex, goodbye, stay safe, and here's to the next time.